I yelled to my squad leaders to move out, and without thinking, I ran ahead with Rocky Bruder, my runner who was now my radioman beside me, towards the first bunker. We could see a machine gun pointing out of it, but no crew members. We reached the machine gun and the first enemy trench line and saw no enemy. The small hill's crest was still 20 yards or so ahead. Suddenly, a lone NKPA soldier came over the hilltop. He was unarmed and obviously on his way to the machine gun. About 10 yards from Bruder and me, he stopped. I pointed my carbine at him and I said, "To Hong," which our Chinese guidebook said means surrender. The soldier did not respond. We didn't know then that the unit on the hill was NKPA. Bruder usually carried an M1 rifle, but he had exchanged it for his predecessor's 45 caliber pistol. Now he couldn't get it out of his holster because of the unfamiliar radio harness he wore. Bruder and I now saw that the soldier we thought was unarmed was holding a grenade at his belt. A silver percussion cap protruded from it, which he seemed to try to tap on his belt buckle to arm. I pulled the trigger on my carbine, forgetting I had put it on safety during the mortar barrage. It was the second time I'd made this mistake in 4 days. The North Korean rolled his grenade to our feet. We tried to jump away, and I finally snapped the safety off my carbine and fired 3 rounds into the soldier. The grenade didn't explode. The enemy machine gunner may not have tapped it hard enough to arm it. My squad leaders were about 50 to 100 yards back urging their men up, so Bruder and I ran the few yards remaining to the hill's top and saw perhaps 30 NKPA soldiers standing or sitting on the hill's backside, an area about 30 yards in diameter. Some were buckling on their gear, and others were moving out of the bunkers that ring the hill. We looked at each other in mutual amazement, and then Bruder fired his 45 and I the remaining rounds of my 30-round carbine at them. Most of the NKPA ran down the hill. 3 prisoners that were apparently too frightened to run surrendered to Rocky and me with our empty weapons. By this time, the squad leaders and several Marines had gotten up and fired at the rapidly retreating NKPA. It was yet early in the morning, but the platoon set up the prescribed hasty defense, even though it was clear there would be no counterattack up the steep ravine to their front. We took some long-range fire from the higher ridge across the ravine, but our 2 machine guns and the tanks below quickly silenced the visible NKPA machine guns on the slope and crest facing us. I asked the company commander for artillery fire on the ridge ahead, and within minutes it came. But on us, not the higher ridge. The new forward observer had ordered fired the same concentration that had been fired on the hill as we moved to attack it earlier that morning. For the 3rd time that day, I yelled and raged on the radio to the company commander, and the barrage finally stopped, but not before several more of my men were wounded. Then our artillery fired on the correct location, further up the ridgeline. NKPA 120mm mortar shells now began to drop on our position, their perforated tail assemblies whistling as they came. The pitch of each accurately forecast how near each round would land. We took cover in the bunkers, except for E.J. Clark, my platoon sergeant, and me. We sat about 4 feet from each other with our backs to a bunker entrance and our weapons trained on the prisoners that sat before us on the hilltop, clad only in loincloths. There was a particularly loud whistle, a huge thud, and a cloud of dust, but no explosion. When the dust settled, we saw sticking from the ground between Clark and me the tail of a 120mm mortar round that was a dud. The bunkers protected my men from all but 2 or 3 casualties, all wounded, none killed. The 3 barrages, 2 enemy and 1 our own, had, however, reduced my platoon to about half strength. There were now perhaps 20 riflemen of the initial 39 and about 10 machine gunners of the original 17-man section.